I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What does the future hold for St. Louis, and how do we get there? This is Nothing Impossible on KMOX.
Welcome into Nothing Impossible, our show about St. Louis innovation. And we're going to go from ag tech. I guess we're going to go from the fields to the grocery store. And then we're going to wrap it up with the latest on a new headquarters development in downtown St. Louis.
Well, I like this idea of going from not only just to the fields, but below ground in the fields to the grocery store. It's like going running the gamut.
Replenishing those fields so that the shelves don't go bare at the grocery store, really.
Have to replenish the shelves, too.
We're going to take you to the Danforth Plant Science Center and talk with Dr. Allison Miller, who's the director of the new Roots for Restoration Biology Integration Institute. And then we're going to take you to Schnuck Markets, and we're going to talk with Dave Steck, who's an executive there, about those new robots that you see roaming the aisles. They've been in a few selected stores for a few years now, but they're going to deploy them chain-wide, the first in the world to deploy this kind of technology chain-wide, Travis.
When do they unionize? That's what I want to know.
Will there be any humans that are displaced by this? Of course, we will ask that question. And then we're going to finish up with the latest on McCormick Barron Salazar announcing a new headquarters in downtown St. Louis. All the questions about that, including, are there incentives involved? We'll answer those coming up as well.
Full show. We should jump right to it. Stick around. We have more Nothing Impossible right after this.
Now back to Nothing Impossible on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
As we continue our innovation conversation in St. Louis, Michael and Travis with you. And there's going to be something new you encounter in the aisles at Schnucks, or maybe not. Depends on your location. It's called Tally.
Tally's designed to actually be a very shy robot.
Tally, that's right. It's a robot, Travis. And joining us is Dave Steck, the Vice President of IT Infrastructure and Application Development for Schnuck Markets. Thank you so much for joining us, Dave.
Thank you very much.
So introduce us. We just heard from Brad Begolia of the manufacturer, Simbi Robotics, there. But tell us about Tally. When did this debut in certain Schnuck stores, and what does it do?
So Tally debuted in 2017 is when we first started testing with it, and we had put it in initially in one store just for 3 days, where I followed it around for 3 days and just watched it and saw it interact with customers and then talked to customers. Then we did a three-store pilot, and then we followed that up with deployment to 16 stores, and after doing some ROI analysis with an outside consulting firm, we put it into 62 stores, and now we're expanding to 111. It is a fully autonomous robot that is scanning the shelves for out on shelf. So if an item's not there, it's going to notify us that the shelf is empty. It's also looking for any missing promotional bibs. So if a sales tag bib is missing, it's going to notify us on that as well. We're also collecting the exact XYZ coordinates for that item, so we know exactly where it is, and then we can build that into our Schnucks Reward app, so the customers will be able to sequence their shopping list for the store that they're in. And if they're looking for something, they can hit the search window in our app and type in what they're looking for, and we can tell them exactly where the item is at.
Well, how has the literal rollout been of Tally?
It's been good. I mean, any new technologies, you're always going to struggle here and there on different things. When we first started, it was mostly an IT project, and then it's grown into much more involvement with the store operations team and trying to understand the best way to deliver this information to the store teammates. When we first started, it was as soon as we could get the information from Tally, which it was traversing three times a day, and within 15 minutes, we knew when an item was out on shelf, so we were sending that to the store teams, and it just became something demoralizing for them because it could never felt like they could get ahead of it. It was, well, I just took care of this problem, and now you're telling me about another. So in partnering with our store operations team, we refined that process so that we're not inundating the store teammates and we're giving them something that's manageable.
Is this something that's going to replace jobs that exist? Does it free people up to do other things? How does this impact the team?
It's one of the questions that we always get asked on this, and it's not replacing store teammates. This is a task that is actually very, very difficult for the store teams to get right. We did follow behind the store teams when they were doing this, and we found that Tally was anywhere from 4 times to 15 times more accurate on scanning out on shelf. It's about the customer experience and making sure that we have the product on the shelf for the customers. It's not, you know, the end all be all. There could be outs on the shelf that are not something that the store teams can correct. There could be an item that's out at the warehouse or we're not able to get it from the manufacturer. So there's other reasons for outs, but this is one that does help the store teammates.
You mentioned the figure about more addressable out of stocks than versus going manual, but I'm also interested in the figure of the amount of reduction of out of stock items. Seems like that, like Tally has reduced basically empty shelves by almost a third.
Well, what we found in doing our analysis is that of the items that Tally is finding, that we have about 30%, yes, that are actionable by the store teams in the store. So we believe that there is inventory in the store in the back room or it's on display somewhere else in the store, so the store teammates can bring that item to the shelf. The other items we're starting to address by swimming upstream and saying, okay, where else in the supply chain are we having these breakdowns that is causing the item not to get to the store in time for the store teammates? And we've also layered in data science and data and analytics on top of this to supplement Tally, because Tally can't get everywhere in the store, or there could be an item that's misplaced and Tally would see it and think it doesn't check to make sure that is an actual box of Cheerios there. It just looks to see that there's a box there. And by supplementing that with data and analytics, we can tell by movement analytics if an item appears to be out, and we can use the same rules that we apply for Tally to make sure that when we dispatch the store teammate there, that it is actually something that they can action on.
There is the integration into your replenishment system, inventory system, and then it also seems like, you know, if you've ordered delivery before, you're always watching to see, all right, when is the shopper going to come on and tell me what they don't have? And I wish I had known what they didn't have beforehand. I would have just chosen something else to begin with. Seems like this helps to make the Schnucks Delivers more accurate for the shopper.
Yeah, we have the data available for, you know, we utilize Instacart for our shopping, and that data is available, but it's an integration that we haven't developed, or Instacart hasn't developed, to know that when we're saying it's out on the shelf, that they're providing an alternative selection for the customer. But that is a capability that we're looking at and we'll build on once we get this fully deployed. It doesn't makes sense to have it there if you're only doing it for a small segment of the stores.
Yeah, it sounds like Schnucks is out ahead of this technology company, Instacart. You're waiting for them to catch up.
Well, we're waiting for them to catch up in some places, but they have an awful lot of work to do as well. And so it's a good partnership with them, and we do spend quite a bit of time working together with them.
Dave, tell us a little bit about how important innovation is to a sector like the grocery business.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's extremely important as you look at the e-com space. I don't know that if you just sit back on your laurels and say, I'm a brick and mortar store and I'm a grocery store and everybody needs food. I don't need to worry about innovating and being technically savvy. I don't know that that's a good decision to make. I think over time, this e-commerce space is going to erode the brick and mortar space. And if you're not adapting to it and adjusting to it, then in the future, you may not exist.
And a little bit more about Schnucks and how you've really gone big into technology and innovation. A couple of years ago, you topped the Dunnhumby Index for most innovative local shopper, if I remember correct. And whether it's Tally or working with Worldwide Technology on Schnucks Rewards, how has regional grocer, in the context of these multinational corporations, how has a regional grocer been able to accomplish so much innovation? Is it in these partnerships? Is it realizing we don't have coders, you know, in every corner here? We're going to find companies that can help us in certain specialties. Is that the key?
Yeah, it is. It is about partnerships. It's looking for the companies that are up and coming. There's a lot of startups that we deal with. There's a lot of things that we've tested that the end consumer is never going to see because we've looked at it and we've dismissed it. I think one of the biggest changes was, changes in the leadership and in a new corporate philosophy of trying new things. So we embrace innovation and we don't just dismiss it out of hand. We're not afraid of it, and it's good to try something and fail because you still learn something. And you take those learnings and adjust and see if you can pivot and do something a little differently from those learnings.
What role do the customers play in informing Schnucks as to what might be next? Is it just purely by the buying behavior? Do you do surveys of your customer base?
There are always surveys that are done. It's part of the receipt process. We are collecting that information as folks get their receipt. We ask them to go on and rate us and tell us areas that we need to improve. There is also on occasion focus groups that are conducted to get the voice of the customer as well.
And back to Tally for just a second. I love this quote from Brad Bagolia of the manufacturer of the robots, Simbi Robotics. If you're wondering, all right, is this robot going to bother me while I'm trying to decide between, Cookie Crisp and Cheerios?
If you come into an aisle where Tally is and you actually step in front of the robot to grab a product, the robot will actually, yield to you, either go around you or sort of exit that aisle because it's essentially congested.
Dave, can you tell us more about the reaction, the response, how people interact with Tally? Especially, I can imagine children are pretty fascinated.
Oh, children are definitely fascinated. There's quite a few social media posts with children interaction with a robot. There's one that recently went viral. It was a young girl, and it was probably the funniest video I've seen posted of the interaction. You will always, doesn't matter what you're doing, you will always find somebody that has something bad to say about it. Or you can give them a gold bar and they'll tell you it's too heavy. But for the most part, the customer reaction is either very positive or they pretty much ignore the robot altogether.
There was one video that went viral.
Correct. It's something that we caught on our social media feed. We asked the customer for permission to post it, and we've posted it to our Facebook and Instagram accounts.
Well, Dave, to wrap up, can you just kind of put this into context? Your release says Schnucks is the first grocer in the world to utilize this kind of technology at scale. Just put this in context for us.
Well, we small regional grocer, not small, smallish regional grocer with 111 stores. We're the first ones to use it chain wide. There's been other retailers that have tried it. Walmart tried it in about 300 of their stores, although we're not really certain how far they got into that 300, if they actually got to that point or not. And then last year they announced that they were abandoning the project altogether because they couldn't figure out how to make it work. I think that really is a testament to the stick-to-itiveness of Schnucks and the willingness to try new things and just get a technology to work. We knew that it would work. it was just trying to figure out the secret sauce to get it there. And I'm pretty proud of the team that it took to pull this together and the partnership with store operations. It wasn't easy, but it's definitely something that's going to make a difference for the consumer.
All right. Thanks so much. This is Dave Steck, Vice President of IT Infrastructure and App Development at Snook Market. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And stick around for more Nothing Impossible right after this.
St. Louis Innovation with Michael and Travis. Nothing Impossible on KMOX.
Well, as we continue talking about St. Louis innovation, there's some big news from the Donald Danforth Plant Science Center, a $12.5 million grant from the National Science Foundation to establish a new institute, the New Roots for Restoration Biology Integration Institute. And Dr. Allison Miller joins us on Nothing Impossible to tell us all about it. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Miller.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So, Dr. Miller, can you give us an understanding of what the scope of this grant is?
Sure. So the National Science Foundation has established the Biology Integration Institute program to fund research that bridges different disciplines within biology with the goal of addressing major challenges in society. And so New Roots for Restoration Biology Integration Institute is focused on the big question of how we might be able to restore degraded landscapes. And it's estimated that about 75% of the world's lands have been impacted by human activities. This includes both activities related to agriculture as well as urbanization and other factors. So the idea of New Roots for Restoration is to build on a lot of excellent work that's going on already in the field of restoration ecology, but to incorporate into that plant organismal systems. And what I mean by that is information about the traits, the features, and their functions, both above ground and even more importantly, below ground of plants. So the integration, one of the points of integration of this institute is to take pretty sophisticated plant biology techniques that allow us to capture information about plants both above ground and below ground, and to think about that in the context of the communities in which those plants live and the soil ecosphere that the plants are in as well, with the idea that perhaps we can uncover some relationships between plant traits and soil restoration, community restoration.
Can you tell us a little bit more about how we got to this point? How did this situation evolve to the point in time where we need an institute like this?
Well, one of the things that happens in the sciences is that scientists are so deeply involved in the specific questions that they're asking and the techniques that they're developing that they tend to get somewhat siloed, which means they're really just working very hard and very deeply on one specific question. And what this institute is trying to do is to force scientists to pull out a bit of those silos and to look across the landscape and to work across disciplines. And so how we got to having a need for a biology integration institute is to really encourage scientists to work outside of their discipline or work adjacent to their discipline to solve these larger challenges. Now, I don't know if you were asking how we got to the question of needing to address restoration or how our landscapes were degraded to begin with. Okay, so excellent question, Michael. There's just a lot of change happening on our planet today, and it's been going on for a while. And I think as the human population has grown, the population of humans has doubled in my lifetime. And I think as our agricultural systems have expanded, agriculture is the world's largest and most rapidly expanding ecosystem on the planet. And those efficient agricultural systems are often based on annual plants, short-lived plants that live for 1 year, that are grown in monocultures. And if you think about a cornfield or a wheat field, that would be an example of an annual monoculture. Those systems are very efficient for production, but they're less efficient when it comes to ecological services or general ecological functions. And so one of the things we're thinking about is, if agriculture is the world's largest and most rapidly expanding ecosystem on the planet, is there a way we can attempt to adapt to agriculture such that it mimics what we know is sustainable based on our understanding of natural systems? And can we use our understanding of plants and plant communities to try to make changes in this really large ecosystem such that it can be productive for people, but it can also provide the ecological services that the planet needs? And just a couple of key points here. Most natural ecosystems consist primarily, not exclusively, but primarily of longer-lived, what we call perennial plants, and plants that are growing together in mixtures. And those are two principles that this Biology Integration Institute is interested in focusing on and seeing if we can apply that perennial plant habit and that diverse community in an agricultural system.
Dr. Miller, I wanted to ask about some of the partners involved in this. I know that Missouri Botanical Gardens is involved, but there's folks from outside of the area too. Tell us about the partnerships.
Sure. So I'm really excited about the team that we've brought together for this. So, of course, the New Roots for Restoration Institute is based at the Danforth Plant Science Center. The Danforth Center is a global leader in plant phenotyping and capturing plant form and function. Beyond that, here in St. Louis, we've brought onto the team computer scientists from St. Louis University, the Missouri Botanical Gardens Shaw Nature Reserve, where we have one of our major experimental plantings in the ground now, and the St. Louis Science Center, whose YES program and GROW exhibit will be incorporated in our education and outreach components. Now, beyond that, the Danforth Center is the strength is, again, plant phenotyping, computer science, computational biology. We bridged to two important groups from the Danforth Center. One is a series of partners who are experts in ecology, restoration ecology, agricultural ecology, and microbial ecology. And for that, we've brought in a team from the University of Kansas. This is a group of community ecologists and microbial ecologists who've been studying the North American prairie for many years and trying to understand patterns of biodiversity in the prairie and how that affects basic ecosystem functioning. We've also brought in a team from the Chicago Botanical Garden, which is very interested in restoration ecology and is working to restore natural landscapes in sustainable a way as possible. We also have a group working in primarily agricultural settings. So our partners at the Land Institute in Salina, Kansas, our lead there is Tim Cruz, who's a soil ecologist and has been studying agroecology both in the Midwest but also in the Southwest for many years. And beyond the Land Institute, our other partner is in Vermont. That's a little bit outside of our I-70, I-55 corridor, but we wanted to have somebody, have a group that was outside of the Midwest, and for that, we've brought in Eric von Wetberg, who is a plant evolutionary geneticist, who will bring in this northeastern perspective. I left one group off, which is the University of Missouri's Center for Agroforestry. That's a group that will actually allow us to think about how trees, the presence of a tree in the landscape, changes plant communities and ecosystem function.
We're talking with Dr. Allison Miller, who's a member of the Danforth Plant Science Center, professor of biology at St. Louis University, and the director of the upcoming New Roots for Restoration Biology Integration Institute at Danforth. And I'm wondering, the discoveries, the understandings, the products, the approaches that come out of this, will these organizations be the ones who go out to implement them? Will they issue open source guidelines to follow? Could there be products and startups that are spun out of the Institute? What happens to really commercialize or at least spread across the country the discoveries that come out of this?
Great question. I think we're thinking about the products of this Institute in two big buckets. One, we're hoping that the data that we generate, the analyses that we complete, and the results that we are able to produce will provide some information on how we might select plants for use in restoration of natural landscapes. So based on plant roots and shoots, our hope is that we can make recommendations on how to go about populating restored ecosystems, restored natural ecosystems. The second big bucket really has to do with agricultural applications, and we are anticipating that our results will be used in what we like to call reimagined agricultural ecosystems. I mentioned our partners at the Land Institute in Salina, Kansas, and the Land Institute has really pioneered and very strongly advocated for a form of agriculture that mimics natural ecosystems, again, in their perenniality and in their diversity. And so our hope is that some of the work that we do might be used to predict how individual species or even specific genotypes might affect those agricultural landscapes in positive ways in terms of their relationship to the soil and their capacity to interact with other species that they might be growing with in what we call polyculture agriculture, which is would be the opposite of a monoculture where you just have a single species.
Well, Dr. Miller, we're thinking a lot about the next generation of how we use the land. What about the next generation of stewards of the land, especially people that historically haven't been part of the scientific community? This grant really helps bring more people into this field, correct?
That's our hope. So our vision was that through building this institute, the institute consists of different institutions across the Midwest and then in Vermont. And what we were trying to do was to build a system where students, people with interest in agriculture or in restoration or in nature could enter the institute in any variety of ways, multiple points of entry, be that through high school internships, college research experiences for undergraduate programs, graduate students, postdocs, even the general public. And then once they kind of became part of the institute, then they would be able to see not only what was happening in a particular location, say at the University of Missouri, but because of the breadth of the institute, participants would become familiar with research happening at other groups affiliated with the Biology Integration Institute. So, for example, if a student entered the institute at Kansas, we have scheduled weekly meetings that are institute-wide over the summer and seminars where they learn not only about the research that's happening out at KU, but also what's going on in natural systems in Chicago and at the Danforth Center here in St. Louis, at the Land Institute in Salina. Many points of entry and ready mobility across the institute. We also fully anticipate being able to recruit and then retain students over multiple years. So for the student who might enter the institute in Kansas, our hope is that maybe in a subsequent year, they might end up serving on a research team in another place associated with this institute. Another major strength here is that we have both rural institutions, those in, say, Columbia, Missouri, or Lawrence, Kansas, or Burlington, Vermont, but also institutions based in major metropolitan areas like here in St. Louis and in the Chicago Botanic Garden outside of Chicago. And with that, we're really hoping that we can recruit a broad diversity of students, people who might not otherwise know about restoration, restoration ecology, agricultural systems, and provide a way in and then a way up and across this field. So we're really excited about our capacity to reach a huge diversity of students and to train students across disciplines, across interests, and to break down some of those silos that I mentioned earlier in research that may have impeded some progress to date around these really challenging global issues such as restoration and agricultural ecosystems.
Well, Dr. Miller, before we let you go, give us an idea of what does success look like?
That is an excellent question that we've been asked before about this institute. My hope is that this institute will inspire people who care about nature, about our land, about our agricultural systems, about our economies, about biodiversity, about human diversity, to come together around a common goal and make some progress in understanding above and below ground plant form and function, and how those plant traits shape the communities that they live in and the soil ecosphere. And what success would look like then would be new understanding of how we might work towards restoring wild landscapes and reimagining agricultural landscapes based on that understanding of how plants interact with their communities and the soil. And to take it just a step further, I've been so encouraged by the outpouring of support for this institute, which was just announced this week, coming from a huge diversity of people, including folks working in prairie restoration here in Missouri, people working in botanical gardens or in urban agricultural landscapes. My hope is that the information that we generate, the understanding that we advance here, would help to improve and to expedite how we are restoring those landscapes and changing the way our agriculture works through actual plant selection based on trait data. The other major part of success, I think, again, is this idea of people coming together with shared passions and concerns for our planet and our agricultural systems, and broadening the range of people who are involved in this. This is not a field for one type of person, nor for one discipline. We really need to team up and work together. So success to me would mean that we're incorporating different perspectives, different backgrounds, and different viewpoints of our planet, all for the end goal of trying to reverse some of the damage that's been done to the landscapes. And I really feel quite optimistic that that's possible, given some of the tools that we have and given the resolve of a broad diversity of people who are working hard towards a common goal.
Well, for the broad diversity of what's happening in the ag tech sector in St. Louis, go to danforthcenter.org or just listen to the show, Travis. I feel like we've been touching on ag tech in St. Louis just about every week here. It's been really heating up lately. Allison Miller, PhD, who's a professor of biology at SLU, member of the Danforth Center, and the director of the New Roots for Restoration Biology Integration Institute. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Stay tuned. We have more Nothing Impossible, St. Louis Innovation, right after this on KMOX.
Now back to Nothing Impossible on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Right now on KMOX, it's the co-founder and chairman of McCormick Barron Salazar, Richard Barron. Tell me about the new headquarters in downtown St. Louis.
Well, we're very excited to move to 100 North Broadway, and it'll give us an opportunity to make some changes with our offices to bring them up to date in many different ways, including new HVAC ventilation and all kinds of new gathering spots.
Why was it important to stay in downtown St. Louis? Why is an urban environment so important for a headquarters like this?
Well, we've been in downtown and in the city of St. Louis since I started the company in 1968. So for us, the city has always been the place where we wanted to be. And our development activity has been primarily in the city of St. Louis. And we feel it's important to add to the downtown in terms of employees having the opportunity to go out and have lunch or just socialize out of the office. And, of course, being located near the Arch and all the rest of the amenities in this area is something we're very excited about.
Now, we heard from the alderman for downtown. He said that in the wake of some recent crime issues, that some companies had told them they were looking for new headquarters and it might not be downtown. They might leave the neighborhood. Was McCormick Barron one of those, or was it downtown and that's it from the beginning?
It was downtown from the beginning. We've never been concerned about security issues in downtown. We think that that we have good security. The police department does a good job. We have people on the street. And that's never really been a concern of ours.
Are there any incentives involved with this move?
Not really. We're moving over, and we'll be part of the project is with the owners. I think they were offered some tax increment financing as part of the project, and also it's in an opportunity zone, but nothing for us at all.
So much about working in an office has changed just health-wise in the last year, but then when you consider technology, how has the changing nature of the workplace impacted you as you look for a new headquarters and now you design what it's going to be like?
Well, we have been working remotely literally for 14, 15 months. And we've been able to overcome the inconvenience for our employees working remotely. Some have really enjoyed it, and we suspect there'll be some group of our folks that will continue to at least work partly remotely. We're making accommodations to that kind of issue now, and we suspect that things will change a bit, but all in all, our productivity has remained high, and we've been able to continue our work across the country.
And finally, 100 North Broadway, recognizable building right there next to the Arch and the old courthouse. It's looked a little tired in recent years, but you've mentioned this massive effort to redevelop it. What was it about this building that attracted you to it?
Well, we've enjoyed it. We've had a long relationship with Trivers Associates, our architects who are working on our office space. We've done many projects with them over the years. And we're very pleased with the new redevelopment effort made by the owners, the atrium and the kinds of things that will be there. And in addition, obviously, to be close to the Arch grounds, an opportunity for our employees to get out during lunch hour and walk in the morning. There'll be a fitness center there, and it'll be a very, very nice space now. And the building will no longer be tired. It'll be very exciting, and we think it'll provide a great working atmosphere for our employees.
All right, that's our show. Thank you so much for joining us. Download the podcast on the new app. It's the Odyssey app. Check it out.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.